Whale. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. This happens to be my views, the views of our guests, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because our guest this evening is Melody Cederstrom, and we're going to be talking really about what's happening financially in the world today. Those of you who listen to our programs regularly will realize that, contrary to everything, you're being controlled by the controlled media, why America is in real trouble financially. The housing market is beginning to sag. Certainly the stocks on the companies that have been building homes, home building companies, are down about 50%, and orders for new homes are down dramatically. That the inventories of unsold homes is growing, and more people are facing foreclosures on their loans that they never should have taken out. In fact, everything was done to encourage people to take out adjustable rate mortgages, so-called ARMs, when they couldn't afford to. So why did they do that? Well, I think, of course, the whole purpose is to destroy our economy here and impoverish our people. They know exactly what they're doing. These are very, very smart people we're dealing with. But they have a different agenda. They have a different worldview because they worship a different God. Kodak certainly is American as apple pie, has recently announced it's going to have to cut back a lot of its employees. It's going to come out meaner and stronger, though, by doing away with a lot of its employees here in the United States. Whether it's going to be shifting overseas, we really don't know. But certainly the traditional photography is really being undercut by digital photography, which seems to be the wave of the future in many respects. And then, of course, we find that so many people who've been selling cars, car selling lots, many of them are actually going under. They have tremendous inventories. They're having real problems moving, and furthermore, why the cars just are not moving. At least American cars are not. Certainly the Japanese cars seem to be doing quite well. That was planned a long time ago. We have interviews going back to the early 1990s, and talking about a talk given in 1969 by Dr. Richard Day, who was the medical director of Planned Parenthood, or had been the medical director of Planned Parenthood, who told about the ultimate plan and how in 1969 they were planning about shifting the automotive base to Japan. American cars would not be as good as Japanese cars. Athletes would get fantastic salaries. Abortion would soon be localized. They would create terrible new diseases that would kill off millions of people, and they would suppress effective treatments for cancer. Fascinating interviews, fascinating insight into the fact that there really is a master plan that I believe is unfolding today. Well, the economy, contrary to what they're telling you and doing so well, is not doing well. And certainly more and more of our manufacturing jobs move overseas every day, and more of our plants move overseas every week. Melody Cederstrom, how are you tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm doing just fine. Thank you for having me on the program.
Well, of course, the only thing that I think is doing very, very well, it looks like gold and silver. They've certainly been performing very well this last week or so.
Well, they certainly have. They've broken through their resistance. But if you look back to the first of the year, gold is up $25, and you have silver up 63 cents. So being ahead of the G7 meeting that they had this weekend, gold is faring very well, and it certainly
Hold that thought right there. Oh, go ahead, Melody. We're saying gold is doing very well. What happened to the meeting this weekend?
Well, I think they just get away for the weekend and discuss things. But, you know, you have the G7 meeting this week in Germany. And, you know, it's the same old where China always comes under review as far as putting pressure on to make its currency a little more flexible. And but usually prior to those meetings, they will attack gold because they, I mean, their main focus is to keep the illusion that the dollar is strong. And usually you'll have a fairly good size drop in gold prior to these meetings. And we also have a lot of economic reports coming out this week. In addition to another reason they need to manipulate the price of gold, so all these reports look good. And naturally, as we all know, gold is the barometer of how the economy is faring. They certainly don't want to show gold making any significant gains or breakthroughs. So I was very pleased to see that ahead of the G7 meeting, gold was only corrected, down a few dollars and another few dollars today. So I think it's doing extremely well.
In fact, if you look at Dubai, it was up to almost, I think it was 669 early this morning. I don't know where it ended the day. Of course, here it was, about 661, 662?
Well, on the spot price, it was 663.70 was the close.
So, that's pretty good. And the silver, where did silver end?
Silver closed today at 1374. And they were both off their highs of the day. The high for gold was 667. And the high for silver was 1391. So I think they've done extremely well holding on to the pressures that I'm sure they're receiving from the Working Group of Financial Markets, the PPT.
And also known as the Plunge Protection Team.
Yeah.
That's, of course, what really is manipulating the entire stock market. The stock market, if you look at the price-earnings ratio, should be far lower than it is today. This is all being kept up by manipulation by the government, because everything is a matter of perception. And many people are affected by what they think is happening to the economy. So you want to fool them into thinking the economy really has to be pretty good. After all, look at how well the market is doing, and but that is simply the Dow Jones. I mean, what about, look at the Standard & Poor's, it's not doing anywhere near as well. And if you look at the overall stock market, it really is faring really quite poorly, right? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cedarstrom. And Melody's commented that gold and silver are really performing very, very well. We see that oil is up as well. And, of course, they always have excuses why oil is up. Oh, you know, the oil is up because, of course, the cartel, OPEC, is nearing its targets. What you have to understand is they have a legal cartel. Cartels are illegal except for oil. And they actually, of course, are encouraging the restriction in production of oil. There's more oil in the world than you can shake a stick at. But if you could restrict a production, well, you can get the prices up. And that's great for Exxon. They made more last year than any corporation in all the history of all mankind over a period of a year. And, of course, the other Shell Oil and Chevron and the other oil companies did comparably well. So what they want is shortages. What people don't understand is the last thing they want is to be, you know, open up what's going on in Anwar and offshore drilling. If they really opened up drilling, there'd be so much oil the price would fall. And which do you think they want? Do you think they want, low prices or high prices? Shortages produce high prices. Excess produces lower prices, and the average American hasn't learned that trick yet. I mean, the oil companies say one thing, and then they do exactly the opposite. In other words, they say, oh, we want to be able to drill all these places, but they're really not trying very hard.
No, they're not. And again, the market is manipulated, just like what you said. And I was reading an article earlier this evening where the only reason that oil is down to the level that it reached was to put pressure on Iran because they would have a little more difficulty in preparation for the continued assault or sanctions, if you may, towards Iran. And just like the invasion into Lebanon back in, what was that, July and August, was mainly to hamper the Hezbollah to eliminate some of their missiles and their equipment to put a little bit of a, you know, to eliminate them so so when they do go into Iran that they're not a big of a problem. And I think this oil with $55, they're doing the same thing. They're trying to put pressure on Iran, and they're just setting things up, setting the stage so they can continue the assault on Iran.
Do you think there's going to be a war with Iran?
You know, it certainly looks that way. I mean, I think he's gone past the point of no return.
But, of course, the American people don't want to expand the war. Very, very few people do. And certainly the Iranian people don't want to go to war.
Certainly not.
And if we don't want to go to war and they don't want to go to war, then why are we going to go to war? I mean, people say, oh, my goodness, you know, they have definite proof now that Iran has provided some of the weapons that have been used to kill American boys. And they say, you know, you can trust us. We have the proof. Well, why should we believe them? They've lied to us about everything else. I mean, why should we believe when they said we have definite proof? They had definite proof about the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam had. They had definite proof that Osama bin Laden was responsible for 9/11. And yet, if you go to the FBI page and look up the 10 most wanted men, there's Osama bin Laden. You can do this on the computer tonight, and there's no mention of 9/11. Why? Because there's no proof that he was involved. But that's the reason we went to war with Afghanistan. I mean, we went to war to get Osama bin Laden. Well, we didn't get him, did we? And since we didn't get him, why don't we just pull out of Afghanistan and just say, well, we're too bad, he got away. Why are troops still fighting in Afghanistan if we really went there to get Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda? So I don't think anything is as it appears to be, and the American people have to realize we've been betrayed. We've been sold down the river, and we're in another Vietnam, another no-win war, which is a stepping stone, I believe, of course, to creating World War III. It's the only way out of the financial mess we're in, and there is no way to ever pay off all the money that we promised to our retirees in Social Security, in Medicare. I mean, we owe somewhere between $50 and $70 trillion. And Professor Kiplikoff has said, and wrote an article, I'm sure you've seen that, Melody, for the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank, which said, the title was, Is America Bankrupt? And the answer is, yes, America's bankrupt. So what do? You go to war, destroy the currency, impoverish the people, and you blame it on Osama bin Laden.
That's right. You're absolutely correct. And I would rather see gold at $250 than go to war with Iran because of the outcome and all the possibilities. And it's not going to be easy. And there's even discussions that we'd actually be taking ground troops into Iran. And so you're absolutely right. It's a war that can't be won. And it is certainly a plan. And but since they're going to go ahead with the plan, the best way to protect your financial purchasing power is by owning gold and silver.
Well, you know, the thing that really bothers me, the latest report is they're going to be shifting another carrier group into the Mediterranean.
Yes.
So that would be three carrier groups in that area. And then, of course, there's something known as the Boxer Strike Force, which is not a carrier, although the Boxer sort of looks like a carrier, but it's much smaller. But, of course, it can carry a large number of helicopters and transport a large number of troops. And there are three or four troop transports in this carrier force, transfer them someplace in the Middle East. And they're sitting there in the Persian Gulf. But what would happen if the Iranians actually should sink one of our major ships? If we were to attack them, would they have the right to attack back again? And, I mean, are the American people willing to risk the lives of 5,000 Americans on one of those carriers because George Bush wants to look good?
You know what, Dad? I was talking to a customer the other day, and her nephew was on probably the last ship that's being sent over. And they tried to talk to him, and he believes that there isn't a weapon that can reach the boat.
I hope and pray that he's right.
I hope so too. But again, it just shows the way the people are misled, the soldiers, the boys, how they are misled into fighting a war that doesn't need to be fought.
Well, when you're in the military, you have to have trust
right.
in your officers. You have to have trust in what you're doing. You have to believe
yeah.
what you're doing is right. And but I think that fortunately, you and I still have the ability to be critical of the policies that have led us to where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Melody and you'd like to talk about what's happening economically or perhaps the financial implications of going to war with Iran, what do you think will happen to the price of oil if we do go to war with Iran? Do you think it'll be able to sit where it is? Do you think the other rest of OPEC nations will expand their production, or do you think it could drive the price of oil to $100 or $150 a barrel?
Well, I think you're going to see, you know, an initial shock of oil rising significantly. I mean, there's all sorts of predictions out there that we could easily see $100 a barrel if we go to war, and if they are able to block the strait and to keep any types of oil coming out. I guess Iran is the fifth or the fourth largest producer of oil, and I do believe they have the higher quality oil. So I believe, yes, at first you can see oil skyrocket, and I guess it's all a matter of waiting to see what happens. I mean, if nuclear war breaks out around the world, yeah, you're going to see, I believe you'd see a lot higher oil than just $100.
But what would happen to our economy if we had $100 oil? I mean, would this have an impact, a profound impact on our already teetering economy?
I think it would come to a screeching halt. I mean, already the truckers out there, once their diesel gets up above $3, they find it very difficult. Their price, the diesel hasn't corrected as much as the oil price has. It's still looking, $2.59, $2.69, $2.89 for diesel. And but hey, it's another great way in which if they put pressure on diesel and raise it, you know, they'll be able to, the government will be able to take over the trucking. They'll be able to nationalize it, just probably like they'll do everything, because you're looking at all of our transports, our airlines, our carriers, our airlines. They can't barely afford to keep going as it is. I mean, they're all still under bankruptcy or you know, looking to cut costs to prevent any further bankruptcy problems. So I think you'd see significant changes in this country, and perhaps they would do what Chavez is doing Venezuela, nationalizing, transportation sector.
Well, of course, the other thing is, what would happen to farming? Because farming is diesel dependent. I mean, most
yeah.
of the tractors are diesel run, diesel, and of course, it's much cheaper to make diesel fuel than gasoline. So if that is true, why is the price of diesel so much higher than gasoline? Well, traditionally, it's always been far lower. You don't think that they're artificially keeping the price of diesel up just to make more money, do you?
Oh, that wouldn't be, Dr. Steele. That wouldn't be. But you're right. The farmers are already hurt so bad. The dairy farmers here in the state of Pennsylvania, they've been interviewed lately on the news programs, and you know, they're producing more milk than they ever had or have, and yet they can barely pay their bills. You know, these farmers have been so hard hit. You know, and the majority of them around here have to sell their farmland to the housing sector.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Melody Cederstrom. We'll welcome your calls from out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and it's more of an academic experience. Just to read the paper, Wall Street Journal, I read it on a daily basis. I'm sure Melody does as well. But when you really see how all of the various parts of the perfect financial storm are coming together, and certainly the housing crisis and the implosion of the house building industry, and then, of course, how the hedge funds are still out there, but, of course, they're having to take more and more chances all the time. When we started talking about derivatives, there were about $200 trillion in derivatives out there, which are bets on bets on bets to secure, you know, risky investments. Today, there are $370 trillion in derivatives. And, of course, as Warren Buffett has said, derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal. And I think that's a good description of what's going on today. And, of course, Warren Buffett is still shorting the American dollar. And believe me, Warren Buffett is an insider. He knows what's going to happen. He's been wrong for the last couple of years, but he's holding his position, and he's willing to bet billions of dollars that the dollar is going to fall. Do you think the dollar will fall this year, or will actually go below 80 in the basket of currencies, Melody?
Absolutely. All the material that I read, all the articles I read, the dollar cannot continue to, there will be faith lost in the dollar. It's continued erosion. Every time a dollar is traded, I mean, a check, I mean, is overdrawn by $8.6 trillion. I mean, and there isn't anything that is being addressed. And you're right, the derivatives is a nightmare waiting to happen. I think it's just so large that people just don't understand or can comprehend the magnitude.
And, of course, the whole idea of derivatives is to take the risk out of making risky investments. The only difficulty is there's not enough money in the whole world to meet even a small fraction of the derivative of potential debts. And if things start to turn bad, so many of our major banks, which are deeply involved with these derivative investments, will go belly up. And I'm talking about the biggest banks in America. And people say, well, that could never happen. Well, you go back to 1980. Eight of the 10 largest banks in the world, most financially stable, solid banks in the world, were Japanese banks. Today, many of those banks are penny stocks. And, of course, then the whole cascade of debt imploded in Japan. It's taken them, well, what are we talking about, 17 years now, and they're still not completely recovered in Japan. People say it couldn't happen here in the United States, and I ask, if God is just, why couldn't it happen here in the United States? We live a wonderful, affluent life, all built upon a fiat paper currency, and paper currencies are the greatest fraud of all time. People honestly believe there's something there of value, and when they wake up one morning to find out that everything they put their security in is worthless, at that point comes the day of reckoning.
According to I have some numbers here, according to the Bank of International Settlements, central bank holdings of U.S. dollars have fallen almost 16% of 59% of the deposits held as of the first quarter of 2006. Since then, the U.S. dollar has fallen further, suggesting that central bankers...
Hold that thought right there. Well, Melody was just saying that, of course, the report that she's been reading, apparently the central banks of the world are beginning to turn their back on dollars. They're beginning to disinvest in dollars. Now, we've had a wonderful advantage that we could export our inflation to other countries. We could create all this money, and then, of course, we could, since we have the reserve currency, the other currencies would hold dollars because that was the vehicle by which you bought oil. You had to pay for oil with dollars, and of course, Saudi Arabia, the Arab countries, always insisted on dollars, so everybody wanted to have dollars to meet their obligations. But now, of course, Iran has shifted over to euros. Venezuela shifting over to euros. And You know, it would appear that many of the major banks of the world, according to what Melody was saying, are beginning to gradually cut back of their holdings of dollars. How much have they actually been cutting back, Melody?
The dollars have fallen almost 16% of 59% of the deposits held as of the first quarter of 2006. Since then, the U.S. dollar has fallen further, suggesting that the central bankers have had enough dollars. The oil-producing nations such as Russia and the OPEC countries, they've diversified their revenues into euros, yen, sterling, and according to data from the Bank of International Settlements. The review shows that the oil producers unloaded $10.4 billion of U.S. treasuries at the fastest pace in more than 3 years, while at the same time boosting their holdings of euros to 22% from 20%.
Now, my understanding is that a lot of the people in Saudi Arabia and the oil-producing countries are actually getting into gold because they're really very concerned.
Yes.
They're concerned because if we go to war with Iran, it could destabilize the whole of the Near East and the Middle East, and a byproduct of that could be a revolutionary movement that would sweep the monarchy out of Saudi Arabia and out of Kuwait and out of so many of these authoritarian countries. The people there, you know, many of them hate the monarchy. Certainly there's a large Shia component in Saudi Arabia, and of course the kingdom, the Sauds, are Sunni. And there's that animosity there, and I don't think it would take very much, you know, get a spark in the tinder that's sitting over there. And I think the Saudis realize that, and I think they're beginning to actually hedge their bets. They may have to make a fast breakaway, get out of town, like the Americans abandoning Vietnam. The Saudis may be forced to leave if things get unstable there in their own country. And I think that certainly this is why Saudi Arabia and so many of the other countries are so concerned about America going to war with Iran.
You know, the euro has displaced the greenback as the world's top currency in international bond markets. And I believe, too, these central banks, these countries, they don't give an accounting of how much gold they are purchasing. They'll say they're looking to, you know, change out and obtain some gold, and perhaps up to a certain percent they're going to trade out of dollars, but they never really mention how much gold exactly they are purchasing. I believe that their currency of choice is the euro because it is backed by a little bit of gold.
Well, my understanding is that Russia is adding gold to their reserves. And that, you know, that Italy is buying some, and that even South Africa is buying gold, one of the largest gold producers in the world, and yet they're actually buying gold for their central bank. Why? Because they want some stability to their currency. And, of course, everybody wants stability for the currency, because if you destabilize the currency, you destabilize the nation. And everybody wants, of course, to stabilize the nation, except the United States, which seems to be hell-bent upon the destruction of the value of our currency, squandering our wealth throughout the world. Our deficit this year, our trade deficit, will be over $800 billion, almost $1 trillion, the largest deficit ever recorded throughout all time. And what are we doing? Why, of course, we're continuing to do exactly the same thing. People are spending their money. Why should they put it in the bank? They know that it's going down in value. Why put your money in the bank when it's going to lose value on a regular basis? So a lot of Americans are just spending, living the good life. But I think most people have an uneasy feeling something's seriously wrong. And I want to assure you, those people who think something is seriously wrong are absolutely right. We have people in positions of power who have a different worldview. They have a different world agenda. They do not believe in the sovereignty of the United States. They don't believe in sovereign nations. Their loyalty is this idea of a world government. They are pledged to the principles of the Earth Charter. And if you haven't read the Earth Charter, it's up on the Internet. It's kept in the Ark of Hope, which is the Luciferian counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. Read the Earth Charter. Understand, it calls for equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And what they're doing is doing away with our currency, Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. So, now, has there been a lot more interest in gold and silver this last week or so?
You know, the last week, yes, because, you know, the buyers out there just have a tendency to wait until, you know, gold starts moving, and then they want to get in before it goes too high. But really, I tell my customers, you just can't wait to, you can't play the market with gold, because if it goes to 700, if it goes back to 650, if it goes back to 625, which I don't think it will, but just with the possibility, it should matter, because you have to look out into the future. And we're in a very strong bull market for gold. There really isn't anything else out there. And gold is where you want to be to protect your wealth. And the central banks go to gold to protect their wealth. And it really isn't anything out there with so little risk. There's certainly a lot of other investments in which you can gamble. And if that's your choice, that's fine. But if you want to play it safe and you want to keep what you have, the best place to put your money is with gold, gold and silver.
Yeah, and of course, they've been the real money for really thousands of years. And the idea that, oh, we can improve on history, we can turn our back and on the history of monetary systems throughout the ages, is just folly. But people have to understand that there's an organized effort to deprecate gold, not even to mention it's going up. They'll tell you that that oil went up today, but they won't mention that gold has been going up very, very strongly in the last, in the last week or two, as is silver. And actually, they're beginning to open up exchange-traded funds, even in silver, in some of the other countries, and, of course, exchange-traded funds in gold in other countries, and certainly in China, where the more and more people are having more and more money, and some people are becoming very wealthy. Why, of course, many of these people, being much smarter than the American people, and understanding the basic fundamentals of economics, many Chinese are investing in gold today. Have you heard that?
Yes. And I also wanted to bring out and mention that the, I don't know if you heard, I'm sure you have, where the U.S. Mint is coming out with a new dollar coin. And what's interesting about that is back in 1979, that is when they replaced the Eisenhower dollar with the Susan B. Anthony. Then in, I believe, when they introduced the Sacagawea dollar, and that was gold in color.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, of course, Melody is talking about the Mint is going to be coming up with a new dollar. Pick up the story there.
They came out with the Sacagawea coin. I believe that was in 2001, when they came out with that dollar, the Sacagawea dollar that was gold in color. And I remember the Walmart had a special agreement with the Mint that they would be the first ones to use it. And each time, if you look when those dollars were introduced, there was a time when there was uncertainty in the markets. And I just think that timing is, I don't believe in coincidence. And now here they're introducing another dollar, and I think it is just to create a stronger illusion to make people believe that with this new dollar coming out, that everything is fine. Also, it's a, I also believe it is a influence on the people to condition the public and the populace into accepting possibly a new dollar. And what's interesting, what I always thought was the Sacagawea, they put that in golden color. They put this new dollar, which will be a George Washington will be featured on the first one, also in a gold color. And what's really sad about that, and I don't take this lightly, but I mean there are some people out there who, you know, they believe it's made with some gold. They don't think it's all gold, but because it's gold colored, they call it a gold coin. They think that there's a little bit of gold in there. So I don't like the fact that they've done that. And where some people could think and believe otherwise in the coin. So is it coincidence that they're coming out with this new dollar at this point in time? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Well, nope. Well, why don't you get out your website, your telephone number, so people would know how to get in touch with Melody Cederstrom if they'd like to, of course, learn more about gold and silver. I should point that Melody out that Melody does support Radio Liberty, and we certainly support her. So go ahead and why don't you get your telephone number out, get your website out, and if you're out there in the listening audience would like to talk to Melody, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. Go ahead.
My telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. And it's an 800 toll-free number, 800-375-4188. The website is Discount Gold and Silver Trading, TRADING. .net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And if you have a question you would like to email me about anything or your gold and silver portfolio, you can email me at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
All right, fine. Certainly, I think that people need to begin to prepare for some difficult times. Having forgotten, most people have forgotten that what Aristotle said, there's nothing inherently wrong, in effect, with fiat money, provided we get perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. Paper money has always collapsed. It's only a matter of time, you know, before it does, and I think that the people in charge of what's going on today know exactly what lays ahead. They just don't want the American people to know. I will tell you that the smart money is making preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead, and more people like George Soros and Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and the people who really understand what's going on are investing in other countries. Right now, about 25% of the American corporations are no longer American corporations. They've been bought up by other people in other countries. We got a note today from one of our listeners back in New Jersey. Why, of course, one of the big turnpikes there in New Jersey has just been sold. We are selling off the infrastructure of our country. We're selling off our roads. We're selling off our bridges. Why? Because the states have to have money. They have to raise money to pay all the pension funds that they promised. And there's certainly no way that they can tax the people anymore. People would be very unhappy. So they're selling off our infrastructure. And, of course, soon, of course, our power companies, our utilities, all of these, sooner or later, will be sold to other countries. And this is what happens to any third world country. That's why it's a third world country, because they do not control their infrastructure. It's all controlled from elsewhere. For as Daniel Webster had said, of all the contrivances for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes them with paper money. Of all the contrivances for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes them with paper money, and we've been deluded for just about a century now. And the American people have really come to believe that paper money has value, but people in other countries know that's not true. And they're beginning, of course, to prepare themselves and protect themselves. Whereas the American people go blithely along the way thinking they're going to get Social Security when they retire. They're going to have Medicare to rely on when they retire. That they're going to get their pension from their company that's been promised to them. And ladies and gentlemen, I got news for you. Most of our company pension funds are bankrupt, and they're going to have to turn them over to the government agency, the guarantee agency, and of course they don't have any money either. It's all built upon borrowed money, and what happens when the government doesn't have the money to back up the pension fund? So we're in real trouble. The states have made amazing promises to their employees. Promises that there is no way in the world that they can ever ever be paid off. And so basically the only way to do it is to sell off the infrastructure of the state, and then when you drive up the highway, paid for with taxpayer funds, you're going to have to pay a toll. To people perhaps from Australia or from Spain. As we know, the NAFTA highway, the Trans-American Highway that's being built now, is being funded to the tune of several hundred billion dollars by a Spanish consortium working with an Australian consortium. That old adage of Buy America is certainly being carried out by people in other countries. They're buying up America. And where is the outcry? Westinghouse used to be as American as apple pie. Westinghouse is no longer an American corporation. It's an international, it is owned by people from Japan, but it's certainly owned by people in other countries. And the profits then that, of course, ensue from all of these companies are not being kept here in America. They're being sent elsewhere. And what are we doing? Why, we're doing everything we can to encourage our corporations to move their money offshore and keep it offshore, because if a major corporation moves to China and makes, you know, $500 million in a year, as long as they don't bring the money back to America, they don't have any pay taxes on it. What do you think American corporations are going to do? Bring the money back to America and invest it here and have to pay 25 or 35% tax, or reinvest it in China or Malaysia or India where they don't have to pay any taxes at all? Melody, it almost looks like they're doing everything. They've designed this whole scam to impoverish America and destroy our industrial base.
They certainly have, and they, you know, it's been their agenda for a very long time, and they've placed people in a situation where, you know, these factories, I mean, you go back and you look from where it all started, you know, where you can see the beginnings of the manipulations of the people. They started making good money. They were, like you said, they were promised, you know, these retirements, and you had a small portion of these people actually were able to obtain it. They were given that, I think, just as, you know, a carrot in front of everybody's face, thinking that's what they want. You had a group of people that actually received decent pensions. They were able to, you know, have nice retirements. And in the meantime, you know, things progressed. People were making $14, $15, $20 an hour. They got hooked. And I think today people feel there's something wrong, but I also think they feel defeated. I just don't understand why they don't say anything, and I just think they're so heavily burdened by their finances and their inability to improve their situation that they come away defeated, and they feel that they have no say anymore, and they're just going to go along with it and do the best they can until, you know, we know what will happen. It's really sad. I mean, I saw an article today, you know, where for the first time where poverty shifts to the suburbs, you know, where people started making a good living you know, they lose their jobs. They were working in the steel mills, or they were working for the factories, the manufacturing, the auto companies. And the next thing you know, you have one with poor health. Something happens. The next one gets laid off. And what jobs do they have? There are none out there. I mean, if you get lucky, and I'm not talking about people who've truly overinvested or where they went out and got the ARMs when they shouldn't have, and used everything to spend on big boats and Cadillacs and Mercedes and went on a spending spree on their debt. I mean, these were hardworking people that had a home, who had a car, and were trying to save for retirement, and they can't. They had to use up all their savings. Now we're a country that, we're in a negative savings rate. We have been for a long, you know, for the past year or so, I believe. And I think people are just defeated. They can't do anything, and so therefore they can't get angry at the party or the order or whatever, the elitists that placed them in that situation.
Well, I think it's really so interesting. Incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But the Republican Party, traditionally, has always talked about balanced budgets, cutting back on big government. I mean, certainly a good sound economic basis where you encourage business by cutting taxes, and you encourage them, of course, to stay here in the United States and produce jobs. And this whole idea of the trickle-down economics, certainly some people at the top will make more than the others, but at least, of course, everybody's going to benefit. And the old adage that a rising tide raises all ships.
It doesn't work.
Well, it would work, except that you're absolutely right. It doesn't work, and it is not working because it isn't intended to work. The Republican Party is controlled by the same people who control the Democrat Party, and the Republicans have given us the biggest deficits in all recorded history. The Republicans have given us the biggest federal deficits in all recorded history. The Republicans have given us the big trade deficits of all recorded history. And people look around and say, well, you know, but the Democrats were the big spenders, and we voted Republican because we thought they were in favor of a sound economic system. And they've done everything wrong. You can't cut taxes, and I'm all in favor of cutting taxes. Boy, I'd like to cut taxes a lot further. But you can't cut taxes and increase spending and then tell us you're going to balance the budget, which is what George Bush said in his State of the Union message. We're going to cut taxes, increase spending, and balance the budget. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't care who you are, that just won't work.
No, it won't. If it does work, he needs to come to work for Discount Gold and Silver and show me how it's done. But no, and people can't pay any more taxes. I mean, they can, and you know, taxes with state, locals, and everything else, they're paying, what, 55%? So I guess there's a little more room that they can take for taxes, but I would think that somewhere along the line there will be a stopping point. And of course, then we look at the other side of the coin, and we see what's happening over in Iran and so forth, and perhaps that will be their stopping point to create the situation needed in order to, you know, begin to purge the systems and let things fall where they may fall. And again, I encourage listeners, if you have your pension funds, if you have, you know, at least if you can't get access to them, try to get some portion of it to protect it with the only insurance policy that will protect it during the hard times of an economic situation, and that's gold and silver.
Should it be in collectibles? Should it be in bulk coins? Should it be in antique coins? What should you be in?
Well, you know, I believe in being diversified, and it really depends on a person's investment objectives and where they are, what they're holding. Are they already holding some gold coins? Usually, rule of thumb is if you're looking for a short-term investment, there's a lot of short-term investors who want to buy gold because they still know what can happen to the dollar, and they might need to use their funds, but they don't want to put it in the bank, then just go with some gold bullion. You can get some fractional pieces for those who want to do a type of bartering. And it's really my job to educate the person who's looking to purchase gold into the various types of gold and what situation will the coin perform in. You know, why do you want to buy fractional pieces of gold? And is one fractional piece better than another? Why do you want to have silver over gold? Or why do you want to have gold over silver? Why do you want to go into the numismatic coins? And what's the best place to go in there? Why do you want to stay away from that rare coin where there is only one of a kind? No, most people don't want that. They want the investment-grade coins that gives them the privacy, the protection, the performance. And you can get that in the investment grade. But it all comes down to the suitability of the client and these coins to the suitability to them. I certainly wouldn't put together a portfolio if someone has, you know, $10,000 and they want to spend versus someone who's looking to spend, you know, $100,000 plus. So my recommendations are really based on the different types of product that's available, what they will do, and trying to become diversified and owning something of everything.
Is there any shortage at all of things like either silver dollars or silver rounds, and things, certainly these silver eagles that are put out by our mint? Are they readily available?
They're pretty much readily available. When you have silver at these high prices, you have a lot of people that liquidate. And so, you know, you're going to, you know, you know, where you have sellers, you have buyers. And we haven't had a problem of more buyers than sellers at this point in time. Sometimes if you're looking, just like today I had my buyers bought a lot of silver last week. And we just track it as far as the ounces of silver, not per se the actual item.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with, so wrap up the program here with Melody Cedarson. All right, Melody, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Is that time already?
The time goes fast, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. The phone number is 1-800-375-4188. The toll-free number, 1-800-375-4188. And you know, folks, you really need to become educated on the different products out there. So when you hear something in the news about a gold coin, or if you hear on television someone that's selling a gold and silver product, you'll be able to know if it's a good buy or not. And you have to become educated on the different products, how they work. You can go to my website, visit the website, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Make sure you spell out that A-N-D. And the email is discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
Well, you know, I think there's going to be a very, very interesting next several months, and really depending upon whether or not they're able to possibly topple the Iranian government by a palace coup, or whether they're really intent upon taking us into a war with Iran, which I fear may be a stepping stone to World War III. So, you know, certainly Iran has very close ties to China. Iran has close ties to Russia. Russia has actually sold Iran a number of anti-aircraft missiles that can be used to bring down American planes. And where is the outcry from America when they're talking about supplying the weapons that can kill American boys? But why should we be surprised? This is what happened during Vietnam, when, of course, we were financing the Russians, who were financing the North Vietnamese, and providing them with the planes and the anti-aircraft missiles that were being used, of course, to shoot down American fighter planes. And, of course, as we've said over and over again, what we are seeing today is deja vu all over again. American corporations and certainly American banks, American oil companies are right over there in Russia doing everything we can to build up a faltering Soviet economy. Now, the Russians are doing better than they have in the past, but where are they getting the money to drill for their oil and for their natural gas? Why, Shell Oil Company, Dutch, of course, but closely aligned with our leaders and American oil companies and banks, they're all over there building up the best enemy that money could buy, that is actually doing everything they can to build up Iran in preparation for the coming war. Melody, we're going to just let you get your number out one more time before you leave. Hold on just a moment. Melody, let's get your telephone number and your webpage out one more time.
1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
Bless you. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Dr. Sam. Good night.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I always enjoy, of course, talking to Melody, and I hope you enjoy our programs. I think it's important that people understand that we are in real serious problems financially. If you've not yet certainly seen my talk, Financial Tsunami. It's available both in DVD and in video. And, of course, it comes with an excellent syllabus that simply lists all of the great American corporations that are no longer great American corporations. About 25% of our domestic corporations are now foreign-owned, and we're losing more all the time as we're selling off our infrastructure. You can't keep, you know, spending more as a nation than you're taking in indefinitely. Pretty soon something's going to give. And what they're doing is giving away the infrastructure of the United States. And a lot of these mega farms we hear about there, they're foreign-owned. A lot of the factories, they're increasingly, large numbers of them are foreign-owned, Chinese-owned, Japanese-owned. They've got the money, and they're going to buy America. Why shouldn't they? We've given them the dollars to do it with. And with that goes any real loyalty to this country. For our leaders have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is the internationalist dream, the New World Order, the New World Religion. Well, you need to get my talk on the financial tsunami, and I suggest that along with the syllabus to give you some understanding of what's going on. And then we encourage people to begin making preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead. We don't know what lies ahead. You need to get our 4-tape set on the Military Commission Act, which goes into the fact that there is a planned program by which the government will be able to establish martial law in America. With any sort of a national emergency, you need to get our 4-tape set on concentration camps or our videos on concentration camps. We have what's been called Bob Wire over America. We have another amazing clip, so you can get the concentration camp special along with some written material about handling of civilian internees in military camps. These are government documents. The information's there. They've been planning this for a long time. They're following a cosmic plan. They intend to have a dictatorship in America, and people say, it could never happen. I would ask, why not? I mean, if they can take us into wars we do not approve of, and Congress, of course, does not have the courage to stand up, and now they're talking about going to war with Iran, and none of our, very, very few of our congressmen want to go to war with Iran. I would say that probably less than 20 to 25% of our population wants to go to war with Iran, but that doesn't matter. They have an agenda. They're following a cosmic plan. As President Bush said, when our founders declared the new order of the ages, they were acting out an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. This is next to the last paragraph of his last inaugural address on the 20th of January, 2005. Get it? And of course it's included in our immigration invasion syllabus. When he talks about the angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm, if you read the Bible, that was God. The angel, of course, is referred to as Lucifer. The angel that rides in the whirlwind, and in fact, the speech concludes, the first inaugural speech, the angel still rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm. That's how the president directed, ended his first inaugural speech. And 100 million Americans heard it, and nobody had any idea what he was talking about. And I'm not even sure George Bush understood, but I'm sure that some of the people in the White House do. After all, Michael Gerson was the senior speechwriter at that time, and where do you think Michael Gerson went to work when he left the White House? Why, he went to work for the Council on Foreign Relations. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. And we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And this evening, for the second hour, we have with us Edward Wisnant. How do you pronounce your name, Edward?
Last name is pronounced Wisnant.
Wisnant.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Edward Wisnant, who's written an interesting book called The Anthology of Stingy Bear's Adventures. The Anthology of Stingy Bear's Adventure. And Stingy Bear is a little bear. And Stingy Bear is a very selfish, self-centered little bear. And, of course, this is a series of children's stories using the backdrop of in modern-day life, you know, as approached from the bear's point of view, of course, you know, pointing out the inconsistencies and, of course, the problem we have with so many people, even our children today, who are so self-centered. And, of course, the battle, the struggle between the father who wants a disciplined child, the mother who just wants to let the children do whatever they want to. And you can't do that. Children have to be disciplined. They have to be brought up in the way of the Lord. They have to be brought up with an understanding that there's a right and there's a wrong way to do things. As one of my teachers told me many years ago, Pastor Roy Kraft, he said, you never have to teach a child to be bad. What you have to do is teach them to be good, because they're inherently bad, and we are all inherently bad, and of course that is the function of the parent, is to teach children to be good, and kind, and considerate, and generous. So, Edward, why don't you just go ahead and tell the story of your book, how do you happen to write it, and what you hope to get accomplished through the book?
Okay. First off, the Anthology of Stingy Bear's Adventures is a series of 52 short stories about the antics and the misadventures of a little bear who's very greedy, self-centered, and frequently lazy. The book also has a lot of social and political satire that and economic information that will appeal to the more mature readers. In other words, this book gives members of the entire family material for discussion. I wrote this book to provoke people of all ages to think. I think I can explain a little bit more about why I wrote the book and why I wrote the book in the manner in which I did if I explain a little bit about my background. I was born in 1958. I grew up in a small town in the mountains of Colorado. And following graduation from high school in 1976, I attended the University of Colorado at Boulder, where in 1980 I graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in Mechanical Engineering. And following graduation, I went to work in the defense industry until about the mid-1990s, where I worked in a declining manufacturing sector. And following a layoff in 2001, I and many of my former co-workers were unable to find any kind of viable work in our post-industrial economy. And subsequently, when my marriage broke up, I didn't get a chance to visit with my kids very often. I have three young children, and trying to make the most of my time with these kids, I used to tell them stories about Stingy Bear. And it got to the point where every weekend when I'd pick my kids up, they'd say, Daddy, tell us about Stingy Bear. And I would. I'd have to have a new story every weekend for them. I tried to explain to them that Stingy Bear should serve as an example of how not to behave, how they should try to learn from his mistakes.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Ed Wisnant. Well, Ed, go right ahead. And certainly, I could. Sometimes storytelling is a very, very good means of getting ideas over. And so, when the limited time that you had with your children, you used Stingy Bear then as a vehicle to begin to transmit to them the basic principles of life that, of course, every child needs to understand.
Yes, and also, almost as important, I was trying to sometimes undo some of the propaganda that they were indoctrinated with in the public schools, as well as trying to undo some of the socialistic perspectives their mother, the social worker, might have been bombarding them with. And I was just trying to give them daddy's perspective that's a little bit different than what they might receive during the other 6 days of the week. And so, like I said, I decided to start writing a book about these stories. One day during visitation, my daughter said, "Daddy, why don't you write a book about all these stories you've been telling us?" And, I got rummaged up $80 for a used Pentium 1 Windows 98 laptop computer, and I sat down and I wrote most of the stories out that I'd been telling my kids. And that eventually became the book, The Anthology of Stingy Bear's Adventures.
Well, it's really a very, very appealing book because it's written really with the idea that there's the Papa Bear. And the Papa Bear is, of course, trying to instill values into the Stingy Bear. Stingy Bear is an only son, and he is so greedy, he is so self-centered, he has all the attributes of an adolescent or pre-adolescent that make them quite intolerable. And of course, there's Mama Bear, and Mama Bear, oh, don't paddle him. You're going to hurt his self-esteem. Don't paddle him. You're going to break his impression of himself. He needs to. You don't want, of course, to change his attitude. Well, of course, Papa Bear is absolutely right. This little bear, Stingy Bear, needs, of course, to be disciplined. Mm-hmm. And of course, simply, I think you bring this out very well. And of course, it's the old biblical adage of spare the rod and spoil the child. Mm-hmm. Children need to be spanked. If you don't, why you see the end result here in America? Well, an undisciplined society where we have over 2 million Americans pushing almost the better part of 1% of our population. In fact, certainly solely 1% of our population is in prison, probation, or parole. And believe me, what a terrible lesson it is when you finally realize there are consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Ed Weisnapp, and we're talking about his book, of course, The Anthology of Stingy Bear's Adventures. And it's really got a wonderful cover on it because you see this big bear head, and then you see this nice suit he's wearing, and it looks just very, very human being with his bear's face on the top of it. And of course, using the idea that the bears are just like people, and they have a society just like people, and certainly talking really about some of the social problems we have here at this time. How, you know, patriotism seems to be backing the government no matter what they do. I mean, if the government's killing people, doing all sorts of things to take away our freedom, why do the patriots always back it? Patriotism, however, is not loyalty to the country. It's not loyalty to the government. It's loyalty to the Constitution and to those concepts of freedom. And of course, you bring these facts out, and you use the backdrop of your book to get this message across. So you pick the story up there, Ed.
Well, thank you. Yes, those are political messages that I try to convey. One of my favorite story in the entire book is the one entitled "The 4th of July," and in which the story is definitely written on two separate levels. One of the celebration and the fun of playing with fireworks on the 4th of July, as seen by a young cub, and then the more solemn sacrificing aspect of the 4th of July is seen from the perspectives of the father and the grandfather who have served in the military and understand the price of freedom is not free. Another important thing I point out in the book is I try to present a strong father image, because in so many books that are being made these days, the authors make the father look fat, lazy, irresponsible, not the least bit intelligent. And so often in contemporary children's literature, the mother, the kids, even the family dog are made to look insightful and intelligent and motivated at the expense of the father. And so often when I take my kids to the bookstore to purchase a book, so that, you know, to help them with their reading, I would often have to say to them, no, Daddy will not buy this book because this author is making the father look foolish and I won't spend my money on this. And it was my resistance to just be quiet and take it that motivated me to write this book, because I felt there were certain social messages that needed to be conveyed to young people that were not being presented in the trite and mundane themes brought forth in contemporary children's literature. Contemporary children's literature has themes like eat your vegetables, share your toys. Often contemporary children's literature exercises poor grammar. And all of these things offended me. And I decided I can do better. And that's why I wrote the book. I also wrote the book. I used some pretty big words in it because I wanted to challenge the young readers upwardly so that they would expand their vocabulary.
As a fact, as I saw what you were doing, I think of these sitcoms where, you know, we have so many effeminate men out there.
Yes.
In fact, the whole idea that a macho, a masculine man, is something to be ridiculed. In fact, that was the message of All in the Family. You know, suddenly the fat, dumb, patriotic guy, you know, Archie Bunker, you know, the typical American. The idea that the John Wayne, the hero, the man who stands for principles, who's willing to risk his life or give his life for principle.
Mm-hmm.
These ideas have been abandoned because there is a conscious effort to change our perspective and to use literature, to use certainly motion pictures and videos, to actually demasculinize men. And of course, they've done a good job of that. Most people don't understand that the testosterone levels of American men has dropped almost 50% over the last several decades, and this is why we have so many men who have a sexual dysfunction. Didn't happen by accident. So they not only play with our minds, they play with our physiology. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people ever to question why the testosterone level of our men has dropped so dramatically over the last 50 years, over the last 20 to 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, fortunately, you've had quite a few speakers on your programs in recent weeks who have helped to address many facets of that particular issue. And as you pointed out, the contemporary news media, entertainment media, educational system are all trying to neuter the father figure, make him inconsequential, make him dispensable. And the thing of it is, I decided to place some argument against that. In this book that I wrote, I have the father playing a very pivotal part. The decisions he makes aren't always the easiest decisions, but he tries to make the right decisions, and frequently he tries to make the right decisions against the principles of contemporary society, which makes the book rather provocative.
It really is. Of course, it really is. It's entertaining reading even for an adult, but of course it's aimed primarily at children to give them those principles and ideas that are so sorely lacking in most children's books, and certainly are completely removed from our cartoons, and so many of the ideas that are programmed into our children's minds. And people need to understand that most of the radio programs, most of the television programs are specifically designed to give our children a message. And
yes,
not a good message at all. Our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas suggested, largely by people we have never heard of, those people who hold the reins of our media.
Yes. And, you know, another thing I try to bring forth in the book is the gradual erosion of our personal freedoms. And one of the government agencies that I talk about in at least five stories in the book is the Department of Bearland Security.
I really enjoy that, Bearland Security, right?
Yeah, and they're always trying to alarm the general public about bearerists attacking the beloved Bearland. And there was one story by how Stingy Bear went to the airport, or the Bearport, as I called it, and managed to get himself arrested, and how he is now on the bearerist watch list, which has all kinds of social implications for this young cub. And in the book, I try to introduce a lot of vocabulary that is kind of specific to the book, but it conveys social meaning, and it attracts the reader's attention. Words like bureau bears and educrats and pseudo-intellectual psychobabblers and plankton-eating tree-huggers. Things that try to get the reader's attention and make them aware of the effects of some of the liberals in our society today.
Well, I think the thing I enjoyed the most was just the sound of messages for children. You should not be selfish. Mm-hmm. You should be generous. You should be considerate. You should not be self-centered. And because this is a totally destructive situation. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to enter in, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I can sympathize with Ed in this book. So many families are breaking up today. Half of our families are ending in divorce. A lot of this is the programs that are being funneled into women's minds, through the desperate housewives, the soap operas, the things that glorify sexual infidelity, and, of course, hopping from one bed to another. And the emphasis on sexuality and eroticism in so many of our television programs today and in so many of our movies today. When was the last time you saw a movie that stressed sexual morality? Can you think back? What was the last time? And you just don't see it, because that is something that is not to be emphasized today. And that is, of course, how they are modifying what's going on in so many women. Really, of course, are taken in by this, that they simply want to find themselves. They want to make something different out of their lives without realizing that being a mother and being a wife is really why God put them here. That doesn't mean that they're certainly be put down. They are our partners. In fact, they are an important part of everything that we do. My wife is an important part of everything I do, and we couldn't do it without. She couldn't do what I do. I couldn't do what she does. It's a partnership, and life is a partnership, and this is what holds a marriage together, after the bloom of passion is long since gone. But I think it's so important that people understand there's a conscious effort to break up marriages, and I know, Ed, that you're a victim of that, and I'm sure that you've been deprived of so much of the opportunity to be with your children.
Well, yes. But like I say, whenever I get with my children, I try to make the most of the time. I try to make them aware of the fact that we live in a time and we're undergoing a radical change in our national character and in our social structure. And again, part of the book is to try to convey to them what these issues are and to think about them so they'll be better able to confront them as young adults.
And I think, of course, you're stressing this idea of the Office of Bearland Security, a parody on the Office of Homeland Security, and how the Office of Homeland Security, like the Gestapo in Hitler's Germany, is being used to control us. And, of course, we have to have an enemy. Of course, in Germany, it was the communists, or it was the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Here, of course, it's the terrorists, the Muslims. But the average Muslim here in America, we may disagree with them. We disagree with their religion, certainly, but the average Muslim is not a threat to America. The few people have been arrested, most have been released, but so many of those who have been arrested and convicted are the victims of agent provocateurs. People have taken them under their wing and indoctrinated them in the radical form of Islam and suggested doing terrible things that they never would have done otherwise. Because, you see, there are people with a different agenda. A different worldview. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and right now we have Kurt calling in from Monterey. Hi, Kurt. How are you doing? Let's see if we can bring up Kurt. Hi, Kurt. How are you doing?
There. I hit the wrong switch. I'm also writing a book on the decay of the American family and what's happened. And some of our research shows some interesting things. This isn't a recent thing. This isn't post-TV. This goes back a lot further. Mm-hmm. If you remember the Carrie Nation era, during that era, the man was made to be the evil thing. The churches got off track one more time, you know, preaching something other than Christ, and preached anti-booze. But the real goal of that, as I can tell, I think the One Worlders were quite active then, the real goal was to make Papa the fool in the family, to make Mama the head of the family. And I think that's the beginning, or close to the beginning, of goddess worship in this country.
Oh, that's an interesting concept. I'll be very interested in seeing your book when you get it done, Kurt. Anything else you'd like to see?
But I think you'll find that the temperance movement was really the primary first motion in this goal of ending the authority of the father in the home.
And then, of course, along comes Margaret Sanger, and her whole idea is to destroy the family and to legalize abortion. And, of course, there was a strong occult background. Of course, Margaret Sanger was deeply involved with the theosophy, and theosophy comes right out of the very pit of hell. And, of course, would destroy the Christian home. That's the very purpose of it. And, you know, between Carrie Nation and then progressing to Margaret Sanger, and then we end up with Gloria Steinem, all of this has nothing to do with femininity. It is to destroy women. It's to destroy their rights. It's to destroy the position they have in a Christian society. We can certainly have that sort of society they have in the Muslim world, where women are nothing but chattel, and in most countries throughout, in most societies, women have no special status. It's only in a Christian society that they have status and rights equal to man. The problem being here, of course, why, of course, they're destroying Christian society with that. Well, because the destruction of feminism, but the destruction of society as well. Any comment at all on what Kurt was saying there, Ed?
One of the things I wanted to mention is one of the reasons why I wrote the book about a homogenous society of grizzly bears was so that I could address a lot of social, political, and economic issues without bringing in the component of ethnicity. When I wrote a book, I didn't want any particular ethnic group to feel excluded from these social issues that we're faced with today.
Well, of course, what we've done, certainly as far as the racial issue, we've taken the black family, which even under adversity and during the time before the Civil Rights Movement, was a cohesive society with a mother and a father, and bound together by certainly a feeling of, we have to stick together. Hard work, getting ahead, Christian values, and we pretty well destroyed that to the point where 75% of the black children born in America are born into a family with no father.
And what's more, we have a government welfare system that helps to perpetuate that situation.
Absolutely. In fact, we punish them if they do get married, and we take away the benefits, and people go so used to taking the benefits, they don't realize, of course, that those benefits are destroying them. Hang on there, Kurt. We'll be back in just a moment here with Ed. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Ed Weisnot, and of course, we're talking about his book, The Anthology of Stingy Bears Adventures. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And the book is really a parody on what's going on in our society today, using the idea of a grizzly bear society, where everybody has their own cave, and of course the mail is delivered to the cave address, and they have a very complicated society, a very, very similar to what we have here in America today. Kurt, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, I think I made a mistake here in emphasis. One of the biggest points I was making is it is the church that undermined the family 135 years ago. It is the churches that attacked the authority of the father in his own home 135 years ago with temperance. My great-grandfather was in temperance. But it is the churches that attacked that and made the woman the head of the family at that point, which is quite contrary to the Bible and can only bring about chaos.
Well, I think they've done a pretty good job.
Yeah, the churches. And I think we need to be aware of that. Maybe restructure our churches. Maybe look at the Bible and look at what the church teaches and go, is it the same?
Yeah, that is a very interesting point, and I can see where it's very valid. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kurt. Of course, one of the big problems we have today, really, is the fact that so many Christians are so heavenly-minded, they're no earthly good, and they're being led into a new type of religion, one where they want to experience religion. They want to experience spirituality, and they're joining the emerging church movement. I talked to a minister's wife today who told me that members of the National Association of Evangelical Christians, ministers, were meeting in San Diego now, and the speakers down there from the emerging church, this new church that wants to take us into a new spirituality and get us used to yoga exercises, and that's how we open our minds to God. And walking the labyrinth, that's how we open our minds to God. And focusing on the flickering candlelights, that's how we open our minds to God. And of course, she was well aware, as I hope every one of our listeners are, this is not how you open your mind to the God of the Bible. You open your mind to the other God. You open your mind to the very devil who is the dominant force in our world today. And of course, is the dominant force in Washington, D.C., moving America towards World War III. And we seem to have forgotten the simple messages of the Bible. Isn't it a shame we don't teach them any longer in our churches? Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Ed Weisnot, and we're talking about his anthology of Cinder Bear's adventures and his book, which is really a parody on modern-day life. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I was just going to say, in reference to Kurt's comments, not only do men today need to pay attention to their position in the home and with their family, they also need to pay attention to their position in the church and its affairs, and basically get back to basics.
I believe that is absolutely true. And unfortunately, you know, the Bible lays out a specific plan for society and for the family,
mm-hmm.
and for man's relationship to government.
Yes.
And we've forgotten so much of this today.
And, you know, one of the things, because I was writing a book about bears, I had to be very careful not to assign any aspects of spirituality to the characters, because I didn't want to offend the potential Christian readership. And that is one of the unfortunate aspects about the book, because I had to treat an entire chapter about Christmas in a very, very secular way. But unfortunately, in our country today, there are a lot of people who celebrate Christmas in a very secular way. So, in some ways, I felt this book about animals didn't exactly give a totally unrealistic portrayal of Christmas as practiced by some members of society.
I don't think I would have been offended had you actually brought it in, that the animals, because, of course, it obviously is a parody on modern society. So, I wouldn't have been offended if you'd had given them any spiritual inclinations, because I know that you're really not talking about grizzly bears. You're
no.
talking about American society today.
Yes.
And what's happening to our children, and of course, all the things, the temptations they have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how do you function in this society? And
yes.
Without discipline, why, of course, you end up with a disorderly society. And, of course, when you have a disorderly society, then, well, you have to have something that gets you back. An orderly society, and those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way we're headed today. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Ed Weisnot, and we're talking about his book, The Anthology of Stingy Bear's Adventures. And Stingy Bear is just a nasty little bear. He has just got all the bad attributes of any child who really has not been brought up properly, who's been spoiled rotten, and he's spoiled rotten because of his mother. I mean, that's the problem. The mother certainly doesn't want discipline, doesn't want anything to happen that will, hurt the child's self-esteem. And, of course, his father bear says he's got too much self-esteem. And that's why he's doing all the wrong things. You picked the story up there.
Well, I was going to say another interesting aspect of this story is the treatment of students in public schools, particularly male students. In one of the stories of the book, Stingy Bear's father is called in for a conference with the grade school principal, and the grade school principal recommends that young Solomon be given the medication Ritalin, not, of course, to be confused with any other common medications that's given to young students in our society today. And one of the things that I like to bring forth in this book is how Father Bear objects to his son being medicated with Ritalin, and how he says he doesn't want to make the pharmaceutical executives richer at the expense of his son's cognitive function. And he says how these politically correct multiculturalists in the school tolerate the perverse cause of every bear imaginable. It's no wonder they cannot understand the inclinations of a bear who's growing up naturally. Father Bear goes on to say public schools should teach cubs how to think, not what to think. And it's statements like these from Father Bear that show cognition of and the kind of guidance that fathers need to present when protecting their kids from people in society who would otherwise make decisions for them that are contrary to their best interests.
And of course, then you have the bear psychologist who is there, who is going to make, and they want to bring the bear psychologist to see Stingy Bear.
Mm-hmm,
and
yes.
The father says, no way, he doesn't want the psychologist coming in. The psychologist, most of them are the most confused people on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have the answers to society. Well, the answers to society and the answers to problems facing society today is fear of the Lord is the beginning of all wisdom. And, of course, the psychologist wants to see how they make us feel better and reason with us, and you can't reason what's going on today. You either follow God's teachings or you don't. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ed Weisnot, and our telephone number here, if you'd like to call us, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Ed, would you like to get your telephone number out, tell people how they can, do they have a website, or tell people how they can get the book?
Sure, I would be glad to. First off, if people would like to learn more about the book and order it, it's available at the internet website, www.stingybear.com. Stingy Bear is all one word, all lowercase letters. And if they don't have internet access, they can order it at Barnes & Noble Bookstore. And also, if anybody wishes to send me an email, my personal email address is edward248w, as in Wisnant, edward248w at yahoo.com. And I would be glad to get feedback from your listeners with regard to this broadcast and perhaps what they think of the book when they get a chance to read it.
We've commented in the letter that you've written to me that you've been listening to our programs for many years. Is that right?
Oh, yes, sir.
How'd you get started listening in the first place?
Well, I first listened to you off of the AM radio station in Johnstown, Colorado. I don't know if I can give out the call letters over the air.
Sure you can. That's all right.
Yeah, I first started listening to KHNC 1360 AM out of Johnstown, Colorado, back in about 1992, back when Mr. Wiedemann first started up that radio station. I lived in Arvada, a suburb not too far from Johnstown, and I just thoroughly enjoyed his many guest speakers and his fine radio programs. And eventually, you, Dr. Stan, became one of the many speakers on that program, and your show was one of my favorite programs. Every time I get up to Denver, I always try to tune in at 8 o'clock in the morning so I can listen in on your message for the day. And, you know, I just, there's so much inspirational information to be gleaned from that radio station and from your radio program, Dr. Stan. And I've just been inspired all these many years by what you folks have had to say.
Well, I feel very, very flattered that I've been on that station you know, as long as I have. You know, some people come and go, but I came and I've never been chided or asked to leave. And so I get up at 6 o'clock every morning so I can get on the program here at 7, which is 8 o'clock in Colorado. And it's a great time. It's drive time. And then, of course, very often they'll play the program again in the evening during drive time.
Yes.
And what an awesome opportunity to reach people with ideas, because we're involved in a battle of ideas. Of course, as you know, it's really a spiritual battle,
mm-hmm.
but you have to express it in form of ideas for people to understand, and you have to put it into historical perspective.
Yes.
And its political perspective, and lastly, of course, into its spiritual perspective, and I feel it's a privilege to be doing that 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year.
Yeah. And another thing I like about your radio program is you have a wide variety of highly intelligent and educated speakers from a variety of different backgrounds. And, you know, a person can really become very well informed on current events and global politics by listening to your guests.
Well, I'm fortunate to have good guests. And, of course, we try to talk about finance. We try to talk about health issues. We try to talk about history. And then, of course, we try to talk about current events. So you're not going to have to just hear one thing all the time, and yet that they all tie together. So I'm pleased to know that you're listening, and we have an excellent audience there in Colorado. And what a privilege it is to have the opportunity to talk to the people there every single day.
Yes, believe me, you're very popular in the area. One of the things that I tried to put in my Stingy Bear book was even a section on the importance of investing in numismatic coins and gold and silver bullion, because we have a fiat money system, and as you know, our economy is in a very precarious position for a wide variety of reasons.
And, of course, you use the Stingy Bear stories to actually put over these ideas, these very fundamental ideas that everybody should be thinking about. I think that's really one of the strengths of the book. But, you know, children, every child is not going to understand that, but you're implanting in the minds of children ideas that will be with them all the rest of their lives.
Yes, sir. And another thing is, what a young reader may not understand this year, they might understand next year, and as an adult, the book will take on an entirely different meaning.
Now, what age groups is this book really aimed at?
Well, I'd say it's intended for readers from ages 10 to 110.
10 to 110, eh?
Yeah. Now, I have to admit that, you know, I've tried not to make this book provocative in terms of being sexually suggestive or anything, but you know, maybe for a kid under 10, it might not be that suitable, or maybe the parents would want to review it first before turning their kid loose with it. But I tried to keep the book in very good taste in terms of morality.
Well, I think, of course, you did. And how do your children respond to the book?
Oh, they're enthralled with it. And, you know, one of the things that I find is rather interesting is my kids aren't just enthralled with it. They're convinced it's a kid's book. And so many of my friends and family who have reviewed the book say, "Oh, Eddie, this isn't a book. This is a book for an adult. This is too complicated for kids." And it's occurred to me that young people are reading one storyline into the book, and the more mature readers are reading another storyline into the book. But everybody is entertained.
And I think that's really very, very true. I could read the book as a pushing 78 years of age and enjoy the stories of Stingy Bear. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And, of course, our society is in crisis because we've lost the fundamental truths of society and fundamental truths that are laid out in the Bible. And, of course, that is how you establish a society. You have to have something that binds it together, a common language. But, of course, there are those people who don't want a common language. Common ideas. There are people who don't want common ideas. You know, a common faith. But everything is being done to destroy the faith of the American people and to introduce alternative faiths, not only into the general population, but into the churches themselves, as we begin moving them away from the teachings of the Bible towards experiencing Christ. Experiencing Christ. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, when you begin getting into experiential Christianity, you're opening yourself up to demonic possession, which is not imaginary. It is really very, very real. Well, Ed, what sort of response have you gotten? How long has the book been out, and does it seem to be selling fairly well?
Well, the book has been out approximately 4 months, and no, it has not been selling very well. I have not had the opportunity up until now to advertise the book, tell people about its availability, and thusly, the sales have been slightly less than stellar. I am trying various strategies now to try to promote the book, because, you know, I definitely need to do something else besides my day job of looking for engineering work.
Are we able eventually to get a fairly good job in your field?
No. The last 5 years, our economy has had very little demand for engineers. As you know, your guest speaker in the last hour pointed out about how, you know, our infrastructure is dwindling, and I can attest firsthand to how over the course of the last 20 years, I've seen machines on the factory floors dismantled and palletized and shipped over to foreign countries. I've seen the file drawers emptied with all of the ISO procedures on all of the manufacturing and fabrication techniques. Those documents have all been shipped over to foreign countries and then translated into various third world languages. And thusly, you know, our country today is in a very precarious position because we're vulnerable because we don't have any manufacturing infrastructure left. And in the last hour, we were talking about the possibility of things getting even worse in the Middle East. And I sincerely hope that doesn't happen, not just because of the loss of life and the loss of property and human suffering, but because our country does not have the manufacturing infrastructure to manufacture the goods that are necessary to support a war effort. We can't be depending upon all of these foreign countries who are potentially hostile provide us with strategic goods when we can no longer manufacturing them amongst ourselves.
Well, you know, that is really the insanity of what's going on today. We have transferred a production of many of the essentials from for our warfare to communist China and to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, these people are not our friends. They never will be. They want to dominate the world. We want to dominate the world. But if you destroy your manufacturing base, you cannot be, you know, a great nation, and you cannot just continue to, you know, continue growing. You have a totally fraudulent economic system built upon sand, and of course, pretty soon the whole thing will come unraveled. But so many of the high-tech electronic things, ideas, things that we need for our sophisticated weaponry are manufactured in communist China today. Does that make any sense? Well, not if you look at it logically. If you understand there's an entirely different agenda, then everything begins to make sense. Now, what people don't understand is that all during the Second World War, it was American corporations that were building the war materials that were being used in Germany to kill American boys. If you understand that, then maybe what's going on today does begin to make a lot more sense. But then most Americans don't know that, or most Americans don't have never heard of Operation Paperclip, where the CIA helped to funnel most of the major Nazi war criminals to South America. Oh, a few were tried at Nuremberg, but Martin Bormann and, of course, Adolf Eichmann and Klaus Barbie and Dr. Mengele, the doctor who loved to torture and kill children, was smuggled to South America for the support of our CIA and MI6, where most of these Nazis either lived out their lives or they were allowed to come to America and work here and live out their lives comfortably. But the American people don't understand that. That's why they sort of are mystified by so much of what we're doing today to help our potential enemies. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're talking with Ed Weissnot about his book, the Anthology of Stingy Bear's Adventures. How old are your children getting to be now, Ed?
Well, my eldest daughter is age 10, and the twins, a boy and a girl, just turned 9.
All right. Now, then I'm sure that they have actually read the book.
Oh, yes. They helped me prepare the manuscript. I really wanted to make sure that they could read it before I submitted it to the publisher.
Of course, you have your story of Christmas and how, of course, Stingy Bear wants to manipulate everything so he'll get more gifts at Christmas.
Yes.
Without any thought of anything else other than total selfishness. And this really is so like so many children today. They always want more. It doesn't matter what they have. There's always something else they want.
Yes, and also Stingy Bear frequently forgets to say thank you. And one of the things I try to point out in the book is, as it gradually goes on, some of Father Bear's lectures are apparently wearing off because the young bear, from one end of the book to the next, starts to remember to say thank you once in a while.
Well, it has to, because you have to train children. You have to train them to be polite. You have to train them how to eat properly. You have to teach them table manners. And, of course, Stingy Bear's father does that all during, of course, the book. And he teaches them about not putting their elbows on the table using their paws properly. the advantages of being generous and being kind and being honest. And of course, Stingy Bear is always trying to manipulate things to his own advantage and taking advantage of his friends.
Mm-hmm. And he has yet to learn that it is in the giving that we receive.
Amen to that.
Another thing I try to put in the book is information on the economy. And, you were talking in the last hour about the introduction of this golden-colored coin, or $1 gold coin that's coming out here later this week. I believe one of the reasons the golden-colored $1 coin is coming out is so that it will free up the printing presses that are presently making our $1 bill and make those printing presses available to make $20 and $100 bills instead. That way, when the powers that be want to pump a lot of money into our economy, we'll have those presses available to make larger denomination notes.
Well, right there now at the present time, they're really in the process of massively increasing the money supply, both M1, M2, and M3.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, but this is going on all throughout the world today. All of the countries, because there is no anchor for money, are churning out money, trying to keep the economy going in Europe and in China and in other countries. But eventually come the day of reckoning, because as you do this, eventually you get to the point where there's so many dollars, a yuan or euros or call it what you will, Deutschmarks or francs. Eventually the money begins to lose all value. That's the history of fiat money systems throughout all time. And that is increasingly what's happening today. And if you look at what a dollar would buy in 1960 and what it'll buy today, there's no question. The house I bought for $42,000 in 1960, it has sold for well over $2 million. Now, of course, I didn't have it at the time, but this has happened with housing. Certainly, it's happened with so many things. Even the food prices have gone up and gone up dramatically here. And I can remember when an artichoke you get 3 for a dollar, and now they're $3 or $4 each.
Mm-hmm. Well, the longer they prolong the inevitable financial crisis, the worse it's going to be.
And certainly they're going to prolong it, but I think that they realize that they're end of that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they need a war. A war is a wonderful cover for financial irresponsibility, and then out, of course, this is what they did, the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
We had to have the Second World War. It was the only way that they could get the economy going again and destroy the value of the currency considerably, and then, of course, well, we blame that on the wicked Adolf Hitler, on the wicked Tojo over in Japan, never pointing the finger at the real engineers of our economic decline. And that was our own Federal Reserve System, a privately owned central bank designed to enrich the bankers and impoverish the people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program with Ed. Ed, get your website out one more time.
Okay, www.stingybear.com. Stingy Bear, all one word, all lowercase letters.
All right, fine. It's a fascinating read. It's a fun book. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Ed, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on your radio program tonight. Thank you. Like I said, the radio audience can order the book at website www.stingybear.com. And if they wish to email me, I can be reached at edward248w@yahoo.com. And one of the things I might point out in reference to your last comment about the last World War, during World War II, the United States had a very sound manufacturing and industrial infrastructure available with which to fight World War II with and to help the Allied countries. And today, we don't have that infrastructure and the manufacturing capability. And if we get into big war, we're going to be up the proverbial creek without the essential means of propulsion. And so I sincerely hope our country does not get into another big war, but I'm not real optimistic about the state of our economy right now. And like I said, I've tried to present some of these issues subtly in this book intended for children. Well, that's about all I have to say about the book. Like I say, Dr. Stan, thank you so much for having me on your radio program tonight. I've enjoyed visiting with you.
Well, I'm glad to get a chance to talk to you, Ed, and I think it's a good book to read. It gives you a sort of an overview of life, and it's much more than a children's book about bears. Although, of course, with the background of the bears, it will appeal to children. Of course, Father Bear and Mother Bear are caricatures of so much of what's going on today. And there's so many mothers who don't realize that you have to have a father and you have to have discipline. Now, some women are wonderful disciplinarians, and maybe they're even better at it than their fathers, than the husbands are. But there are an awful lot of women today who have been schooled in the liberal theology, and that is, never discipline your child. You're going to hurt them psychologically. And, of course, they've forgotten that admonition laid out so long ago. You spare the rod and you spoil the child. And remember what I said earlier. There never was a child that you had to teach to be bad. Every child is born inherently bad, and it's only a matter of degree. You don't have to teach them to be bad. You have to teach them to be good. And that is the job of parents. Well, Ed, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for writing the book. God bless. I do well with the book.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Ed and the book. It is really a parody on what's going on in the world today. Well, let me just simply mention a couple of things, which we have done some programs on iodine, pointing out that most people in the Western world are deficient in iodine. They used to put iodine into our bread. They used to put iodine into our milk. They used to put iodine in all of the salt. And then somebody decided to take it out of the milk. and out of the bread and substitute bromide, and which of course is a very toxic substance. And then of course to take iodine out of about half of our salt. And so there are many, many conditions which are, of course, are aggravated by low levels of iodine. If you study what the difference between the Japanese diet and the American diet, the Japanese consume about 12.5 milligrams of iodine a day. Here we consume about 12.5 micrograms. In other words, they have almost 100 times more iodine in the diet in Japan than we do here. And, of course, they have much less in the way of malignancies. They live longer in Japan than we do here. And there's so many diseases that seem to be iodine-linked, like fibrocystic disease of the breast. And there seems to be the breasts need iodine. In fact, you need iodine for so many of the functions of your body. We have an excellent article written by Dr. Donald Miller, who will be our guest in about a week and a half here on Radio Liberty. We have a two-hour interview with Dr. Fletcher, a one-hour interview with Dr. Blaylock, and we'll soon have a four-tape set on iodine available for you. But if you're interested, of course, would like to order iodine, we are carrying something called Iodorol, which is a combination of iodine and iodide. Iodine being what is in Lugol's solution, iodide is an iodized form of iodine. So the two of them together seem to work better, at least according to the doctor who designed this. He's a retired professor of OBGYN who recognized the low iodine in so many of his patients and has set out, of course, to introduce these ideas. In fact, I talked to Professor Donald Miller, who's a professor of cardiac or cardiopulmonary surgery at the University of Washington, who just attended a meeting this last week and called me just yesterday. We'll be having him on one of our programs here very, very soon, and then we'll complete our four-tape set. But if you're interested in getting the Iodorol, which Barbara and I have started taking, well, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And if you'd like an article on this, on iodine, really you need to take magnesium and selenium. Along with that, we'll be glad to, of course, just send you the article. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. When you get the colds or things of that sort, I know what I take is something called Alibiotic. It's a mixture of five herbs, and of course it's garlic and oil of oregano, and there are about three other things in there that elderberry juice, which is some studies have shown that it really does help as far as influenza is concerned. All of these things are additive, and they're really, they'll help to boost your immune response, so that's Alibiotic. Oil of oregano is something which is excellent. If you're interested in these or many other items, we do have a health catalog. We'll be carrying IP6, which is certainly what is used for cleansing and getting the heavy metals out of your body. And of course, the iron, which is removed by IP6, is one of the things that both infections and tumors feed on. So, and of course, vitamin D, you need to be taking large doses of vitamin D. Why? Because it helps to control infections and influenza, but it also helps to prevent tumor growth. Yet there seem to be evidence that this is very effective, been found by in some studies to be affected as far as tumor growth is concerned, or at least preventing the onset of this. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It's 1-800-544-8927. Just ask for a health catalog. We'll be glad to send you one. And start making preparations to look after your own health.